Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Stafford Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Monday, August 22nd, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
A lot of things to talk about today. A lot of things are going on, and they're all good for gold, I do believe. And but let's get started with the market report here in just a few moments. A little bit of pressure on gold today. Still holding above that 1335, which is a very important number. So we're looking at gold down 3 at 1339. Silver down 36 cents today at $19. Platinum was down 9 at 1108. Palladium was down 19 at $695. The USDX today is trading a little bit stronger, 0.04 at 94.54. Crude oil's down 147 at 46.81. The paper markets today, we have the Dow. So I'm watching the last few ticks come through. The numbers come through, down 23 points, 18,529. The NASDAQ was up 6, 52.44. The S&P, basically unchanged, 21.82. 10-year yield, 1.54%, down 0.04. The euro is 113. And just a mixed bag in the European and Asian markets. So a very quiet day in trade. Things moved and stayed there, although the Dow was down much more than the 23 points as it clawed its way back to some degree. And again, we have the Wyoming-Jackson Hole meeting this week with central bankers and all the movers and shakers of that control your purchasing power.
That allegedly control.
They try.
They create the illusion of control. They claim to control. But there's just an incredible growing doubt that these people aren't in control. They don't know what's going on here. And it's becoming something we've talked about on this program for a year anyway. And it's becoming more mainstream. They said, I don't think the Fed can do anything.
Well, they can't, but the point is that the Dow's at 18,000. There is still a little bit of control out there. Things aren't – it's not meltdown. When it's in meltdown, they have lost control.
Well, the only control they seem to have, if they have any at all, is they have these meetings every so often, and then they say something. And everybody goes, oh, my gosh, the oracles up there at the Federal Reserve have read the tea leaves or the bones or something like that, and they've made a statement. And everybody, the people jump and holler and panic. It's not control. It's just
I'm not giving them gold stars. But, you know, you have to give them a little bit, and I'm not praising them. And when I say by giving them credit, yeah, they have destroyed this country. Wall Street, our government, by the fiat currency, they've taken away our liberties and our rights. They destroyed our purchasing power. Yeah, no, I'm not happy with them at all. However, they have been able to create and bring back the illusion that things are good. I mean, you have the Dow at 18,000. We know why, but it still gives the illusion, and you're right. But until we're in actual quote-unquote meltdown, yeah, I mean, they certainly are out of stimulus. You know, they bailed out all the ones that had to be bailed out. Do I agree with that? Of course not. We'd be far better off today if they would have left those, the too bigs to fail. We'd be in much better position today. But they're going to keep printing. They're going to keep doing whatever stimulus they can. They're going to keep doing whatever they can do just to keep this little bit of norm going. And so when they do lose final control, Katie bar the door. And it was interesting because Germany, I think you saw the same thing. Germany came out today to tell its people to stockpile food and water. For the first time since the end of the Cold War, the German government told its citizens to stockpile just in case of an attack or
a catastrophe.
Mm-hmm. Germany is currently on high alert after two Islamist attacks and a shooting by a mentally unstable teenager. And over the weekend, I guess Turkey, terrible thing at a wedding, 50-some people were killed by a teenager, 12 to 14 years old, wearing a bomb belt. And that's just, man.
I understand, but what's that got to do with an entire nation?
Well, let me finish.
They're supposed to be. You have these individual events, but they're anticipating something major to affect the entire nation of Germany.
Yeah.
And they're saying you need to stockpile food to last for 10 days. And they said people would be required to stockpile enough drinking water for 5 days. Now, what kind? They don't have hurricanes. They don't have tornadoes. I don't know. Don't think they have any earthquakes to speak of in Germany. This isn't going to be a natural disaster. Plus, it's only going to last for 5 or 10 days. And they say in the article here, they say that they don't anticipate an attack on Germany's territory. They don't see that as being likely. So we're not going to get stockpile of food and water in case of a war. We're not stockpiling food and water in case of a natural catastrophe. So what is it? They say, however, the precautionary measures demand that the people prepare appropriately for a development. I don't say what the development is, but a development that could threaten our existence and cannot be categorically ruled out in the future. What kind of development are they talking about, Melody? I think the only thing that fits the bill, it's not a natural disaster. It's not an attack by an invasion by Russia or somebody. It sounds to me like it might be a bank holiday. It's only going to last 5 or 10 days. A bank holiday where they shut down all the banks, couldn't get any money out of the bank, while they, changed currencies, reset the value?
Well,
what are they going to do here? I mean, I don't know that that's the answer, but this is, what is this? What is this development? And that's what they say, a development, a possible development.
Joseph Stiglitz, he's a Nobel Prize-winning economist. He said that Europe is heading toward a cataclysmic event that could lead to the collapse of the euro and the end of the European project as we know it. Yeah. He had an interview with Business Insider, and he argues that the European single currency would inevitably cease to be at some point in the future unless drastic changes are made. Now, what he is doing, he's pointing toward Italy as being the catalyst of the problems, that Italy could be the trigger for such an event, that it is a big risk. People are trying to work with Italy's prime minister. They want him to resign and climb down from his commitment that he will, you know, he's putting through a referendum, you know, and we all know their banks, their oldest bank in the country is just about ready to go belly up. They've had, in April, the country's financial sector, they're plagued by an enormous amount of bad loans, that the government in April was forced into rallying bank executives, insurers, investors to put about $5.5 billion behind a rescue fund for its weakest bank. You have JP Morgan, Deutsche Bank, HSBC at the end of July. They agreed to a rescue package for the Monte dei Paschi di Siena, the world's oldest bank. Italy has some major problems. So perhaps that is the Stiglitz goes on and he talks about how the it used to be the bondholders that used to take a lot of the that would take the losses, but now they're really going after the depositors, and he expects something perhaps like Cyprus. And he thinks Cyprus was a bad idea. He says, but this is what you're seeing as far as Italy and their banks. So, yeah, that's
it's consistent with my speculation of what they're anticipating, what Germany's anticipating. Say, look, you're going to need 5 or 10 days worth of food and water.
Well, yeah, we know Italy. I mean, we know the European zone isn't healthy. I mean,
financial
my gosh,
problem.
We haven't
monetary
heard of Greece.
Problem.
You know, Greece is, you know, a baby compared to Italy. And so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just triviality, practically. And yet, as small as Greece is, it has still been treated as if it would be sufficient, if it went bankrupt, to mm-hmm. perhaps crash the European monetary system. I mean, they have all they had to do is just say, fine, just let them file for bankruptcy and be done with it. Then leave them alone. Let them, you know, wander around in their own squalor. They have fought to keep Greece online to at least promise that it's going to pay its remaining debt and let that debt be deemed to be a performing debt, and therefore they don't have to write it off their books. I think that's been their fundamental motive, is they can't let Greece write off any more of its debt. So they can't let them file for bankruptcy. And Greece is relatively small. In theory, if Greece filed for bankruptcy, it might have toppled the whole system. I don't know if that's true, but I speculate that it might be. But if it's true, the little Greece could topple the whole system, then it probably has to be true. But Italy, which is, I don't know, something like, it's in the top 10 economies mm-hmm. of the world, if I understand mm-hmm. correctly, might be something like 5th or 7th, something like that. If they go under, they could take the whole European Union with them. At least that would be a legitimate concern. So it's just, you know, anyway, it's just interesting. Germany's telling people stock up on food and water enough to last for, say, 2 weeks.
Our government tells us to get duct tape. Get duct tape. Anyway, that was after 9/11, if anybody remembers. You know, we were told.
No, I
get,
don't.
We were
that was
told,
before my
we were
time.
Told to get duct tape. Well, you're just old.
That was before
you're
my time.
Old. You're just old.
No, that was
remember.
Before my time, Melody. I'm not that old. So.
Here's an interesting article. It's about India. You don't hear much about India. And it's about their new central bank chief. Maybe this is something our own Federal Reserve and government should follow. But Patel, The incoming central bank chief has every intention of taking away the bank's 100 billion pacifiers. Instead of just sitting there waiting for the government to give them more mother's milk, this is from the article, I think it was a Forbes article, they can start using their smarts and their risk calculators to earn that money for themselves. And it's like, yeah, you know what? We think of socialism just for the people, but, you know, look at all these, you know, the corporate welfare and everything and the banker welfare socialist. And he said, this article goes on and says it's going to be a messy fight. But if Patel's own research is any guide, it's safe to assume that sometime after his elevation to Reserve Bank of India governor early next month, and he's Oxford and Yale educated economist, he's going to make an attempt to take his predecessor. Thank you. It's one of those days. Against the nation's state-dominated, bad loan-plagued banking system to its logical conclusion. So he's telling them to get off your butts, get to work, figure it out. You know, I'm going to cut off the funds coming to you and deal with the bad loans. And,
How will they deal with them, though? I mean, that's the problem in a debt-based monetary system, in a debt-based debt-based economy. How do you deal with bad loans? You have to write them off. You write off the correlative assets, the paper assets, the bonds and the rest, that they become worthless. If those bonds are sitting in a bank that has fractional reserve banking, they've got $1 million worth of bonds sitting in the bank, and here in the United States, they can, in theory, lend out $9 million worth of consumer loans. If that $1 million that they're holding in the bank vault, a U.S. government bond, if the government can't pay the debt, the bond becomes worthless, and in theory, they have to pull in $9 million from consumers. That had been loaned out. They said, they've got to cancel loan, bring the money back. There's a multiplier effect. This fractional reserve banking works great when the system is improving and everybody's getting rich and they're making more and more money, and it seems like you found the money tree and it is multiplying right in front of your eyes. But if things go badly, all of a sudden it divides right in front of your eyes. And the same forces that worked for you to make you rich will work against you to make you poor and impoverished. And they're caught in a situation they can't get rid of the debt.
Well, I mean, this guy has 3 years to persuade the prime minister that the socialist era has passed. I mean, you either go down the same path or you have to start making changes, or those are your three choices. You try to correct things. You work and try to, you know, get these businesses to where they start functioning on their own, except for waiting for handouts, you know, keeping these rates low and everything. They can just let it collapse, you know. I guess it's two things. Yeah, you either work on it, you go as is.
Yeah, I agree that something's got to be done, and I don't mind.
Something's going to break.
Oh, that's exactly right. And what's going to break is your debt-based monetary system, in my opinion. That whole thing is going to blow up, and when it does, people are going to have to go back and say, we're going to have to start using gold or silver. Now, maybe they're going to try special drawing rights or whatever, but I don't think anything's going to work. Once the fiat monetary system fails and people understand why it failed, I think they're going to demand gold, silver, some sort of a tangible backing for currency. And then we get back to perhaps something like normal or something like prosperity or something like reason. But as it stands, they can't admit they're wrong. It's like the Federal Reserve. They can't admit that the fundamental problem is fiat currency, because that's all they do is provide fiat currency. If they have to admit that fiat currency is toxic to the economy and to the nation, then the Federal Reserve itself is toxic. They can't admit the truth without condemning themselves. And so they proceed as if this is some mystery. Gee, I have no idea. We're trying run everything we can to run the economy and manage the economy and stimulate the economy, and it doesn't, and none of our attempts succeed, and we have no idea why. It's a mystery. It's not a mystery. Your product is toxic, and it's Federal Reserve notes. Let's take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
We have a little special here at Discount Gold and Silver for the week. It's a half ounce, 1/2 ounce American Gold Eagle and a $20 face value of 90% silver. We're upping the gold coin from a 1/10 ounce from last week to a 1/2 ounce. American Gold Eagle, $20 face value of 90% silver. It's going to be a mixed bag of quarters and dimes. And that total package is $1,040. That includes all your shipping and insurance costs. So it's a great little package. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. We talk about Obamacare. And, you know, we have the time of the year where the insurance exchanges open up. People can find out what their new rates are going to be. So in a few months, you're going to have a lot of millions of people shopping on these insurance exchanges. And what they're going to find out, according to the latest data, insurers have requested average rate hikes of nearly 24%. Those that regulators have already approved, the average 17%. And notification of these increases for 2017, people are going to get those in the mailboxes. But there was I could have sworn I saw something where the rate hikes. Residents of some states, they can look upon a 24% hike as a bargain. Arizona's, we know that two of their largest insurers, Blue Cross Blue Shield and Phoenix Health Plans, they're asking for rate hikes of over 60%. And these two companies...
60%.
The two companies cover 88% of the state's exchange customers. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Tennessee, which covers 73% of that state's exchange customers, they're requesting a 63% premium increase.
Those people are either crazy or desperate.
Well, when you look at, if you look at Arizona, you do have a lot of, it's on the border. And I would think that you have a lot of folks there that, get a lot. There's probably a lot of subsidies coming out of Arizona along with Tennessee. I don't know, but I would think that's why they would have to ask for a
larger. You're suggesting that there are a lot of illegal aliens.
I'm not saying illegal aliens. I'm just talking about people who can't afford insurance. If you sign up for it, you get it. I mean, I heard of premiums where people pay a buck. Well, that premium has to be subsidized by somebody. So no, you don't have to be an illegal alien. It's just people who don't make enough money to pay for their own insurance, or they get a, they're on disability or something. So yeah, that's.
I saw an article today that quoted Texas Governor Greg Abbott speaking about Obamacare, and essentially saying, "Look, this thing is in a debt spiral. It's going down.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to last." And I'm not sure how long it is. I can't tell you how long it will last, but it certainly looks as if this is dying. It's fracturing. Corporations are bailing out, saying we're not going to deal with this anymore. Some of them, they are cutting back their exchange, their participation exchange from a dozen or 15 states to 4 states.
They are collapsing. 16. Of 23 state-sponsored co-op health plans created by Obamacare have failed.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just failing. And you do. You have the largest. You have the United Health, the third largest, Aetna. I think Humana, they're fleeing. They're closing down their exchanges. And Aetna, I talked about Aetna last week. There's a little bit more involved in there than just, we're not making any money, because they were doing that merger. And then they're basically blackmailing the government, because the government didn't want them to merge. So they said, fine, we're going to close our exchanges then.
Uh-huh.
So there's a little bit more to it than that. But people can't afford these. So they have a choice. Are you going to pay the penalty or pay a 60% increase? Well, you know what? $695 isn't that's sad when that's lower than a health insurance premium.
$695 for what? I don't understand.
The penalty.
Oh, the penalty.
People can decide whether they're going to pay a penalty of the greater of $695 or.
But they've got to give the government some money.
Yeah.
Either way. It a lot of money or you give it a little money.
Now,
which would you rather give?
It's sad that $695 can't cover an insurance policy.
Well, it could. Part of the reason we have this problem is because they actually regulate and restrict access to health care. Right? We operate under the assumption that the only people who can provide health care are physicians who've gone to medical school and graduated by the time they were 25 years old or whatever. There are nurses, I know, that are competent to deal with probably 80% of the problems that the average person encounters, and we're going to go down, get the wife, get the kids, get whatever, and go down to the local healthcare facility. Right? You don't necessarily need a licensed doctor who's gone through endless education to deal with everything that happens. And yet the licensing requirement says, it's all got to go through through the doctors. Let some nurses do it, all right? There are people who are trained, you know, there are people who are trained to do medical procedures while they were in the military. Corpsmen, first aidmen, you know. And they come back, they know something about medicine. They can deal with a lot of the problems. And if you remove, I'm not saying remove, but if you minimize the requirement for dealing with someone who went to school until they were 25 years old, they've got a bunch of money to pay off. Right? They've got debts to pay off, and they didn't go into medicine just to heal people. They went into medicine to try to make a buck. Well, set them back to the side and let the free market solve some of these problems. I'm not saying it's a perfect solution, but as a practical matter, you're going to have to choose between either getting the health care you can afford or getting no health care at all. And if all you can afford is some guy who spent 2 years in Iraq as a Marine corpsman, all right, that's what I can afford. He knows how to put a splint on a broken arm. All right, he can do something for us. He can do first aid and whatever. If that's all you can afford, well, then the government has to let you have what you can afford. And let the free market solve this rather than the government. The government says, to heck with that. They want to solve everything, and they don't believe the free market should solve anything.
Many years ago, I can remember your communities, your little towns. They'd have community hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for people who didn't have insurance. If you didn't have insurance for whatever reason, that's where you went. I mean, you know, if you needed to, you know, to be hospitalized. But but you don't have those anymore because they became profit orientated.
Yeah.
So, you know, they became
they became businesses rather than
you used to have,
medical facilities.
You know, various, you know, the Catholic Church was big on healthcare, and you know, you would have a wide range of doctors. You could go to any town and find a doctor that didn't, you know, cut your arm off to pay for it. I mean, he was usually an older doctor that was just, you know, he could cure, you know, he'd give you something for a call. And you used to know who they were.
Yeah.
You know, if you were had something serious, you knew where to go to get that situation taken care of. Now you're controlled by the insurance companies, mainly the insurance companies. You're controlled by who you can see, when you can see it, and how you can see it. You know, and then you have to get approved. You know, it's.
And what if you don't follow every one of those procedural steps?
Yeah, you're
you'll
out
get
of luck.
Sued. Not just out of luck. You'll
no,
get sued
just...
if you're a doctor. You'll get sued into oblivion if you're the doctor, the hospital, whatever. Part of the problem we have with the medical system is that it's been damaged. And I'm not here to defend doctors per se, but it's been damaged by the legal system. They've been forced. I can remember as a child, right? This is back in the old days when they had wooden wheels and that sort of thing. My sister and I would have tonsillitis just about every winter when we were kids. Right? And Dr. Gladstone would drive all the way from McHenry up in Illinois to our home in Crystal Lake, which is 15, 20 miles, I don't know. And he'd drive, make that 20-mile trip to come down and give us a shot of penicillin or whatever, and he'd show up with a little black bag. All right? Now, doctors are afraid to move without all this testing equipment. They can't just operate out of a little black bag anymore. They've got to use all of this equipment to hook you up, wire you up, monitor whatever's going on, do the tests and more tests and tests after that in order to determine what the problem is. I admit, you know what, maybe that all these tests serve a good purpose. I don't doubt that they're beneficial. Maybe we're getting too many of them. And we're getting them not because they're part of medical care so much as they're part of legal defense, which all adds to the cost. And now we have people who can't afford doctors. Therefore, we have to have Obamacare to help people that are too poor to afford they can't afford a medical system that we have right now. Somewhere along the line, the government's got to step back, and we also have to step back, and we have to stop suing everybody. I mean, it's almost like, gee, if I could only go to the hospital and catch pneumonia, then I could really clean up by suing them. You can't just go to the hospital and make a buck, and the hospital can't operate just to make a buck. I know everybody has to get paid, but there are imbalances here that lead to problems, and the problems ultimately manifest in the form of Obamacare, which leads to more problems. Where do we go? I think you're going to have to take a course in first aid yourself, Melody. Before it's done, you're going to have to get a book on first aid or something on the internet or whatever where you learn how to do first aid, how to diagnose your own problems.
Perhaps.
Maybe. Maybe.
But, yeah, it certainly is. So be prepared, folks, for your health insurance premiums to rise next year.
Yeah, I know. They're going to have somebody standing there with one of those little needles. They've got this. Everyone has probably seen the picture of this big black guy next to Hillary Clinton carrying some sort of a needle that injects. If you have a seizure, they just give you, hit you in the thigh or wherever, and give you a fast injection, and it puts off the seizure. That's reportedly what's going on. Wherever they give you the news that, oops, your premium is going up by 24% or maybe even 60%. They should have people on staff right there that have these devices where they're able to give you jab you with a needle in the thigh,
prevent you
from going into seizure.
Well, there's something else. We have an article here about the high cost of burials.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another one.
Yeah, and so again, but things are just continuing to get more and more expensive. And
The high cost of burials forcing American families to donate their dead relatives to medical schools.
Mm-hmm.
See, if Aunt Mary, she dies. Now, it explains that the average cost of funerals in this country are running between $8,000 and $10,000. And if you're on the hook for paying Aunt Mary's funeral, well, maybe we don't actually have to give her a funeral. Maybe we could just donate her carcass to a medical school. I don't think you'd paid anything, but they will use her. They will use her body for teaching students on anatomy and whatever. And you'll save yourself $8,000 or $10,000. And the article is, what was this from? Natural News? Yeah, Natural News. Just saying, this is now a viable alternative. You don't need to go pick out a headstone. You don't need to go pick out a casket. All you've got to pick out is a medical school where you can donate the corpse of your dearly departed and save yourself $8,000 or $10,000. Well, this is the kind of thing that you look at, and it's just evidence of how bizarre our system has become. There is something wrong here when people can't even afford to bury their dead. There is something happening when too many people are too greedy. Too many people are getting away, thanks, I think, to government regulation. Public's not subject. We don't have the free market to keep morticians in line. There are enough regulations. It's so hard to. There's a time when you could be an undertaker. If you wanted to be an undertaker, be an undertaker. If you wanted to be a lawyer, be a lawyer. Right? If you wanted to be a doctor, you could take a course on it by mail. Right? And hang out a shingle. You might not. You might be a sawbones. You might not be the best doctor the world ever saw, but you could provide services at a price your neighbors could afford. Now it's a situation of how much can you get? How much can you make? And every step of the way, they have people billing you for a buck or two for an aspirin. And they can justify this one way or another, and yet it's not right. We can't just work on the basis of some people get to live large, have a home on the country club, on the golf course. You can't just do that. Somewhere along the line, you just got to accept the fact that you can't get fabulously wealthy at other people's expense. And we have a mindset that denies that possibility right now. So, no, get all you can and to heck with the rest of them. Well, it won't last. And it will contribute to a difficult and painful reset. And we're perhaps headed there, who knows when, but in the near future. Let's take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned.
The aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
I'm Alfred Addisk. This is Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom and an article here on Fed's new Facebook friends slam central bank for monetary enslavement and currency destruction. That's the headline from MarketWatch. In the text, it says, in part, the Federal Reserve on Thursday added Facebook to its growing social media arsenal, with the aim of increasing the accessibility and availability of the central bank through press releases, speeches, testimony, frequently asked questions, and other internet-y stuff. That may be the intent, but so far it's serving more as a sounding board for frustrated masses in the market for some virtual catharsis. Of course, you probably won't need a bunch of salivating cyber trolls to tell you there's an uneasy relationship between the public and the Fed. But here are some of the top responses that are going up on the Fed's Facebook page. Stephen Kennedy, he says, quick question. I'm a newbie at this, but I'm trying to take over a country through monetary enslavement and currency destruction. Any pointers? Mike Mahary, he said, see, this is the problem. A bunch of arrogant suits who think they're smart enough to run an economy. No group of people has the knowledge to manage the economy. Only a fool would think so. There's third one, Nicholas Wilson. You people are owned by the Rothschilds and you attempt to act like you're part of the government. I'm sure you check under your bed every single night to make sure Ron Paul isn't there pushing for an audit of your corrupt organization. They go on and they say hundreds upon hundreds of rants piled up over the weekend. And perhaps in the spirit of transparency, the Fed has allowed them to remain, at least for now. The point here is that by establishing a Facebook page for the Fed, they're getting some real feedback from the public. And at least a sizable percentage of the public is angry at the Fed. I would say that 20 years ago, people wouldn't know what to think about the Federal Reserve, generally speaking. Today, there's a substantial portion of the public that is angry at the Fed. And the Fed should pay attention to this. Because sooner or later, these people, the Fed can keep on smiling and grinning and pumping smoke and shining mirrors at us and the rest of it. But sooner or later, the public is going to have its way in this matter, even if its way is foolish and short-sighted. And the Fed is increasingly perceived as something of a villain. And I don't think that perception is entirely wrong. They are instrumental in feeding us a fiat currency. They're instrumental in deceiving us into thinking that worthless pieces of paper can be used just as easily for money as gold or silver coin. And the truth is they can't. There is a problem, and people are sensing this, and they're beginning to look at the Fed and say, you guys, you're the bad guys. We're going to do something about this, although it might be several years before anything meaningful happens, or it might be, who knows, 6 months. Might happen in the first quarter next year. It's hard to say, but the Fed can't count on public support right now. And if we can't, and if the public isn't going to support the Fed, and they are vocal about disparaging the Fed, then the Fed probably can't count on the support of politicians either. How many politicians are going to come to the front and say, well, I'm in favor of the Federal Reserve, and I think we need to take more taxpayer money to support the Federal Reserve? Who's going to do that? If there's growing animosity between the public and the Federal Reserve. So this is just another leaf in the breeze that points to a time when the Federal Reserve is going to be in peril. And with it, the fiat dollar will also be in peril. And insofar as that's true, people are going to look even more fondly on gold. Like I said, this is what I want. I want some gold coins. I do not want more of this Federal Reserve paper. So we'll watch and see, but it's an interesting to me. It's the feedback they're getting on the Facebook page for the Federal Reserve indicates that there's a problem here. And on top of everything else, it's not just a question of growing animosity. It's a question of growing awareness. You know, we talk about some of the principles, the theories as to what real money is, what the Fed has been doing with fiat currency, and how we're going to suffer a great problem when they finally admit the debt can't be paid. Virtually all of this can be traced in large measure to the Federal Reserve. There was a time when you could talk about these things and virtually no one in the room had any idea of what you're talking about. That time is gone. Everybody's got a clue. There's something wrong with the Federal Reserve. They may not be able to articulate it. They may not be able to specify this is what's wrong. But everybody, and almost everyone, understands there's a problem over there where they have the Federal Reserve. That is evidence of a kind of sea change in the body politic where we are beginning to understand who some of our greatest adversaries may be. And the Federal Reserve may fall into that category. The whole world is getting like this. We see the government used to be protected by the mainstream media. And it was difficult for us to perceive who the bad guys were. The mainstream media still seeks to protect the government, but we have this alternative media on the internet where you can find out who the bad guys are, get a pretty good indication of who they are. It's available. The information's available, and some people are getting angry about it. I don't think that bodes well for the Federal Reserve, nor does it bode well for the fiat dollar.
A sex melody.
Well, I just wanted to say, I wonder how long it will be before Facebook eliminates those comments. You know, because they, you know, we all know how they, you know, you start putting comments and all of a sudden you're deleted and so forth. But so it's.
Well, that was the close of the article. It said the the Fed has allowed the comments to remain for now.
Well, it's Facebook. I mean, it's known that Facebook goes and anything about Donald Trump or anything, boy, oh boy, they'll clean your account and so forth. So, yes, good old Facebook. But anyway.
Got another one here from Business Insider. And it says, the next big consensus view in economics has arrived. That's the headline. It says, for years following the financial crisis, policymakers around the world sought to follow the post-crisis response endorsed by the International Monetary Fund of reducing debt burdens to ease the stress of recession on various economies. Well, I look at this, reducing debt burdens, where did that happen? I didn't see that happen. Debt has gone up and up and continues to be up, and it's so great that it can't be paid ever. So I don't see that there have been a serious attempt to reduce debt burdens. But it says this mostly involves cutting government spending and raising taxes. This is known as austerity. All right, this is what they had in Greece. Government stopped providing benefits and increased taxes. Austerity. Analysts at the Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, summarized the case for fiscal stimulus. All right, fiscal stimulus is stimulus is provided by the government. Monetary stimulus is stimulus provided by the Federal Reserve and central banks. Okay? And analysts at the Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, summarized the case for fiscal stimulus and which country could still have some time to go before they jump on the fiscal stimulus bandwagon. Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, their overview, the global consensus view, said this point is important to keep in mind as we begin working through the implications of what it means when people who Paul Krugman would call very serious people all start agreeing that fiscal stimulus is a good thing. So this is the idea behind this article. We have relied up until now, or at least recently, we have relied on monetary policy from the Federal Reserve to get us out of the Great Recession, which started back in 2008-2009. And the Federal Reserve has attempted to print the currency and keep interest rates low, and supposedly that was going to help bring us out of the recession and cause a recovery, but it didn't work. The central bank's monetary policy did not succeed in restoring the economy to full strength. And for the last year, the Federal Reserve and other central banks have been complaining they've done everything they can do. There's nothing more. And they're admitting there's nothing else. They have nothing else that works, and they don't want to do anymore, perhaps because they've increased their own debt so greatly they may be on the verge of some sort of a they may be vulnerable to some sort of collapse. And they say the next step has got to be fiscal. We've got to have a fiscal policy from government, and the government's now up to them, the government, to save us. This is allegedly the next big thing. Federal banks, again, and Central Reserve, they've complained for the last 6-12 months there's nothing more they can do to stimulate U.S. and global economies. Central banks are insisting that whatever additional stimulus is needed, it must come from the government's fiscal policies. But if governments agree to stimulate the economy with fiscal policy, that should mean increased government spending and lowered taxes. Where will the currency come from for the government to spend if the government is spending more and taxing less? How's that going to work out? How the government's, and the answer, of course, is that government has to borrow more. If they're going to spend more to stimulate the economy, but they're not going to tax more, which would slow the economy down, then they have to borrow more. But more borrowing means a bigger national debt and raises the question of who will lend more currency to the government that's already overly indebted, and so overly indebted that it can't hope to ever repay its existing debt in full. Who's going to keep lending money to the government? For the past 5 or 6 years, the answer to that question has been and will continue to be the Federal Reserve. Thus, the Federal Reserve is trying to dump responsibility for stimulating on the government. But the only way the government can stimulate the economy is to print bonds and sell them at full face value to the Federal Reserve. And the point here is that as the lender of last resort, as the world's number one printer of fiat dollars, the Federal Reserve can't evade responsibility for trying to provide more economic stimulus. The government can't make a move. The Fed is saying, we can't do anything. We can't help anymore. But the government can't do anything if it raises taxes, it slows the economy. The only way the government can stimulate the economy is by borrowing money, and the only entity likely to lend money in large quantities to the government is the Federal Reserve. So it's all about the money, Melody. Insofar as the Federal Reserve is the ultimate printer of fiat dollars, and more fiat dollars are needed to stimulate the economy, the Fed can't escape liability for the recession, depression, and or weak recovery. First implication, the Federal Reserve and the fiat dollar might be vulnerable to being destroyed if the economy doesn't pick up steam. And the second implication is if the Federal Reserve and fiat dollar are both vulnerable to destruction, if the economy can't be stimulated, it follows that the value of physical gold should rise dramatically if the economy can't be stimulated into a recovery. The point, I guess, here is the Federal Reserve and other central banks say there's nothing more we can do. Monetary policy won't save the world. The only thing that will work now is fiscal policy, but the government can't employ. How many governments can engage in fiscal policy, which includes spending more without borrowing more, and who's going to lend them any money other than the Federal Reserve? And that will only add to whatever problems the Federal Reserve already has. We are caught in a kind of vicious cycle. We're caught in a situation where there's no place to turn, nowhere to run. We can stall for a while. We can kick the can. We've been kicking the can down the road for the last 7, 8 years. And we've had great success at kicking the can down the road so far, but we're going to come to an end. There's going to be a moment where finally we won't be able to avoid dealing with and confronting reality. And that reality, in my opinion, is first, the debt is too big to ever be repaid. And second, we are caught in this debt-based fiat monetary system that leads every nation that's ever tried anything like it, leads them to destruction. We're going to get that. We're going to have, I don't mean the nation will be destroyed, but it will be depressed and seriously depressed for a considerable period of time. We're out of time, Melody. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.